Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, June 25th, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I wondered out loud if an election result just a few miles away in New York City signals a major shift in the Democratic Party in both Connecticut and nationally. Southern Connecticut State University political science and urban affairs professor Dr. Jonathan Wharton joined us to talk about that Big Apple race, along with the latest on Governor Ned Lamont and President Trump. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Hard dropped by to chat about a couple of controversial vetoes by Governor Ned Lamont and rumors of another possible Republican gubernatorial candidate.
So if you've been listening to my program, especially here on WICC Connoisseur Media, for probably about the last 2 or 3 years, there's something I've been warning you folks about, and it happened last night. Now, let me back up. Let me, as we used to say in this business, rewind the tape.
Yes.
Who remembers tape? Rewind the tape. Let's go back to 2015, when Donald Trump came down the golden staircase at Trump Tower, and I was looking at it over my shoulder at the TV in my bedroom going, oh, come on. This is a joke, right? This can't be serious. Well, we all know what happened. We all know what happened. There was the 2016 run in which he won, the 2020 run in which he almost won, and the 2024 run in which he won. So I think you could say, especially without going on to out onto a weak limb here of any tree, that the whole MAGA thing, Make America Great Again, whether you think it's a joke, whether you think it's deadly serious, whether you think it's in the middle, I think you have to agree by any stretch that the Republican Party transformation happened, right? Now, you may think you may be full-on MAGA. You may have the red hat. You may have the Trump bumper sticker on your vehicle. You may be kind of half and half meds on meds, or you may be a Republican still in name only going, oh. But here's the bottom line. It happened. We all thought it happened, right? We all know it happened. Even the people who said and who continue to say, hey, this MAGA thing is gonna peter out. He'll never win in 2024. Well, they're still extracting their foot from their mouth and their head from their posterior. So I think you would agree with me, right? That the transformation, whether you like it or not, for better, for worse, we should say, like when we take our vows, in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health, the MAGA transformation of the Republican Party has happened. And what have I said to you? And to you folks who would call up and laugh at me and laugh at other Republicans and laugh at conservatives, what did I say to you folks? Wait for it to happen on the other side. Just wait, because it's coming. What did I say? The James Carvilles of the world, the Ed Kochs of the world, the Ed Rendells of the world, the Joe Bidens of the world, the David Axelrods of the world, the Richard Blumenthal of the Democratic world, Blumenthals, I should say, they're all fading out, and you ain't gonna like what's coming up behind it. And brother and sister, did we get a look at that last night in New York City? Now, it kind of has already happened in some other cities and towns across the state, but across the country, the various states. But when something happens like this in New York City, if you are not terrified, and you're a Democrat, or maybe you're not a registered Democrat, but you may say, well, I'm certainly not a Republican. I'm kind of a person that leans center left. Let me tell you something. You should be freaking terrified at what happened in the Democratic mayoral primary last night in New York City. Oh, you didn't pay attention to that. Well, I'll tell you about that coming up as we kick it off here with an earthquake in the Democratic Party. And by the way, I'm sure a lot of Democrats in this state, a lot of disaffected, far-left-leaning Democrats in this state, you know, the ones who don't like Ned Lamont, I'm sure they're taking notes.
And I will bet you that a lot of party operatives here in the state that don't like Ned Lamont, that don't like anybody who would step up if he stepped aside, who don't like Democrats in general, they must be hugging and comparing notes today. Because I got to tell you, you Democrats, you just had your MAGA moment last night. And it was only a few miles away here from all of us in beautiful Fairfield County, Connecticut. Did you see what happened in New York City last night? And this happened to the party who for 12 years has laughed at Republicans saying, well, look what happened. Look where you people are with Trump. Okay. I admit I thought he shouldn't run again for a third time, and look what happened, and you know, I was wrong. But did you see this in New York last night? Get used to the name Zohran Mamdani, Zohranmamdani, Zohran Mamdani. He is a Democratic socialist. And he won or virtually run. They have ranked choice voting there, so we may not know the actual result till later on today or maybe even tomorrow by the time they do all the calculations here. The guy won the Democratic mayoral primary in New York City. So that noise you heard last night were people like John Lindsay and A. Beam and Ed Koch spinning in their graves. Now, I know what you're going to say, Paul. What's the big deal? New York has always been a Democratic city. No. This guy's not a Democrat. Just the way a lot of people said, well, you know, that Trump, I'm disappointed because John McCain is a real Republican and the Bush family, they're real Republicans. Oh, my God. Donald John Trump is no Republican. Okay, and guess what? In the most important city in the world, this guy, Zohran Mamdani, ain't a Democrat. This ain't the second coming of Ed Koch. Or A. Beam, or John Lindsay, or Jimmy Walker. This guy's a leftist socialist who also tiptoes around the phrase, you know, or the word intifada. Yes. You folks, you Democrats out there who are laughing at Republicans right now, go ahead and laugh, because sometimes I laugh too. But did you see what happened in New York City last night? And you may say, well, it's only in New York. No. You folks who laugh at the Republican Party, who laugh at the Republicans in Hartford, for they're the party of Trump. Well, guess what? You're now the party, unless there's a major upset in November, and it may happen, because from what you're reading now, the Democrats are scheming. How can they get this guy not to win? This guy is a Muslim Democratic, leftist, borderline, anti-Semitic socialist who pulled off a major upset over Andrew Cuomo last night. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, it's because Andrew Cuomo, they don't like Andrew Cuomo. Okay, and then what are you going to say if and when, and that's a big if, because remember, Eric Adams, the embattled current mayor of New York, he's running on the independent line, so he could still win. I get it. But then what are you going to say if New York City, the city that a lot of you Fairfield County liberals go into and out of every day, is ruled by a Democratic socialist who wants to, you know, go higher and more intense on cash-free bail, no cash bail. He's talked about on the fast of housing homeless people in the subway. He wants a rent freeze for a good part of New York. He wants city-owned grocery stores. He wants to raise taxes on the rich in New York, which he can't even do by statute. Now, I know he only got 44% of the ballots last night, but in New York City, that may be good enough for a win. But here's my point. Whether he wins or loses, you my liberal friends out there, this is the type of next-generation Democrat you're going to get. And how did he win? Very simply, as the great columnist John Podhoretz pointed out this morning in Commentary Magazine, it's the same sort of rhetoric we hear here in Connecticut from the group, those in Connecticut who don't think that, you know,
Ned Lamont is liberal enough. Well, everything's expensive. You can't live in the cities. It's patently unfair. And he knew that that would resonate with younger voters in New York, a multiracial, multi-ethnic kind of conglomerate of voters. And look, the guy's no dummy, but he's a socialist. He's a far leftist who, I don't know, may be an anti-Semite too, which wouldn't surprise me, which you get from the left today. Got a lot of progressive endorsements only because of his borderline anti-Semitic values. Mamdani co-founded his college's first Students for Justice in Palestine chapter, and he's been a vocal critic of Israel's military response to the Hamas attacks of October 7, 2023. While mourning the loss of Israeli and Palestinian lives, Mamdani condemned Israel's decision to cut power to Gaza and the occupation in a statement the day after the attack. Mamdani further stirred controversy the week before the primary when, in an interview with The Bulwark, that's a conservative anti-Trump sort of publication, he refused to condemn the phrase, globalize the intifada. Now, you folks out there who may have an interest in New York City, you may work there, you may have a relative or two who live there, and particularly if you're of the Jewish faith, this guy has refused to condemn the phrase, globalize the intifada, which many Jewish people interpret as a call for violence against them in Israel. Even as some pro-Palestinian protesters say, it's a peaceful call to resist Israel's occupation of Gaza. When asked whether the slogan made him uncomfortable, Mamdani said it captured, quote, a desperate desire for equality and for equal rights in standing up for Palestinian human rights. Yeah. After his comment was condemned by the National Holocaust Museum and other Jewish leaders, Mamdani told reporters, it pains me to be called an anti-Semite. Yeah, okay. I've said at every opportunity there's no room for anti-Semitism in this city, this country. I've said that because it is something I personally believe. Okay. But globalize the intifada. There you go. So, look, get ready, my Democratic friends, because this is coming. Do you understand? This is coming for your party. Now, it may not necessarily spread to other cities and towns, but what have I been saying for 2 or 3 years? All the people that laugh at Trump, and Lord knows I still laugh at him sometimes too. A lot of conservatives do. But I'm telling you, this is coming, and it wouldn't surprise me if this popped up in Connecticut. Maybe not to the example with the ethnicities we have here, but you don't think somebody on the far left in this state, you know, you have the usual suspects being rumored to maybe make a run at Ned Lamont, Saud Anwar, perhaps Josh Elliott of Hamden, others. You don't think they're looking at New York City and saying, "Hey, if we, if we couch this in an economic term or terms to hook the voters in and then get them, we can move on all this other stuff." So my question to you to start this. On our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofct, does the win by Zohran Mamdani in Tuesday's New York mayoral primary signal a hard leftward shift ahead for the National Democratic Party? Because think about it. Think about it. Just the way a lot of people out there say, well, Trump, you can't consider Trump a real Republican. He's MAGA. Oh, my God. What would Eisenhower say about that? Okay. What if this guy wins in New York City? You still going to consider him a Democrat? Or what he really says he is, a Democratic socialist. Nice job, Democrats. This is what happens when you took everybody's vote for granted. And now we could be a few months away from a mayor who, you know, tiptoes around the intifada term, which is offensive to Jews. And you may have a mayor who will say, well, I'm not a Democrat, I'm a Democratic Socialist. And you know who's laughing about this? All the Republican candidates around the country. They will look at Zohran Mamdani from a political point of view. I'm sure he's a nice guy, married guy, whatever. They're going to look at him and say, this is what's coming from the other side. Agree or not? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Is this what's ahead for the local Connecticut Democratic Party and National Democrats, or is this just perhaps an aberration? And one of my go-to guys, all things politics, worldwide, nationally, and locally, Dr. Jonathan Warden, Southern Connecticut State University Political Science and Urban Affairs Professor, joining us once again. Hey, John, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Good, Paul. Boy, you're really putting me up there. You know me, I keep it to the state and local. You stretch me on the national stuff.
Well, yeah, but Jack, I mean, hey, you're the guy that worked in Congress, not me.
Well, that's true. All right, touche. But that was back in the 90s when the parties got along a little bit better than what's going on.
Wait a minute, John, are you telling me in that day, back then, you actually, I don't know, maybe had lunch with Democrats? Is this what you're telling me now?
Huh? I work for both sides of the aisle, mind you. And every time I go to Capitol Hill, they tell me I'm a dinosaur.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. Hey, John, let's start over the border here a little bit. This is Zohran Mamdani, apparent win last night. They have the ranked choice voting in New York, so it's going to take a while, I guess, maybe tonight or tomorrow. Is this maybe a sort of a MAGA moment for the Democratic Party, or has this been coming, you know, down the pike for years now? What do you think of this? Is this just isolated locally, or is this going to be a trend now?
All the above. You know, there's not a precise answer for this. And I think, if anything, you know, we saw what happened with David Hogg, being the vice chair of the DNC, and how they shook him out and they didn't know what to do with him in the first place. So maybe you can kind of begin with that as a trial balloon. But I think New York is very unique because we have to remember they have ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
And that's very quirky with those cross endorsements. But the turnout was apparently, you know, we'll know probably by next week what the turnout effect was. But among younger voters, it was quite interesting from what the early, exit polls indicate.
And Chris Murphy, you've seen this, John. He's been very active, and every magazine is doing a sit down with him. And he talks about economic populism to get a foothold with younger voters. And I guess this is what Mr. Mamdani did, pointing out, I guess, John, that, yeah, everything is really expensive in New York, and it's out of reach for a lot of disaffected young people.
And it's not just New York. I mean, pick your city, Boston,
Connecticut,
San Francisco. Yeah. Well, even Connecticut. I mean, Stanford's not quite affordable. I mean, pick your city. I mean, God knows New Haven has been the talk of it. And people like Justin Ellicker, among others, the ones trying to, you know, address this. But it's more than this. I think there has been for quite a while this generational struggle within the Democratic Party that's now coming out. And really, it's been there all along. We need to keep also in mind, as I'm always emphasizing you, Paul, and your listeners, that remember, the majority of your voters in America are unaffiliated voters, as at least a plurality, but especially among younger voters, those under 40. I mean, there's so many of these unaffiliated and independent voters. We just tend to overlook them, and we shouldn't.
Yeah, and John, listen, I'm an old guy bordering on old here, but, you know, early 1980s, I'm at Boston University in the city of Boston. We have a one-bedroom apartment. My roommate and I, we shared. And back then, John, I think a month. And now, again, this is two generations ago, but it was $425 a month, so $250 a month. And now I'm seeing the prices. You mentioned New Haven, but it's Bridgeport and Stanford, whatever. I mean, for example, they just opened those apartments where the old Coliseum used to be, and a 400-square-foot studio was almost $2,000 a month. I mean, it's tough for younger voters out there.
Well, you saw the new plans coming out for the new development across from the train station there, Union Station there in New Haven. They just came out, and same thing. What they tend to do, or they're trying to do, is to have a certain percentage of these housing units based on affordability factors, especially for middle class. But it tends to be, you know, at best, what, 10, 20, 30% tops? Yeah. Generally 30%. 10, 20% of these units would be pegged to your income. But that's still not enough in terms of affordability factors in cities like New Haven.
Yeah, let's talk housing. And the guest is Dr. Jonathan Warden, Southern Connecticut State University. Boy, John, Ned Lamont, who I think is a centrist, does a very good job. He is just getting pummeled. by the members of his own party here for doing something, John, that is afforded to governors. If they don't think something is good, they can veto it. But, boy, the tone of the criticism here, I don't know about you, but I am shocked that it's this vitriolic. Are you or not?
No, about that housing bill, right? His vetoing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. I think a part was that, remember, Paul, he was wavering on this for weeks as to his decision, overall, even before the veto came about, of his support. He didn't quite make it known. He wasn't really out there on it. And I'm not surprised. It is a very controversial thing to discuss about affordability housing options, but more so when the state is the one trying to, you know, suggest or push or prod with any number of proposals they have for years within the General Assembly. The thought is, and he even admitted to it publicly, is that a lot of this should be locally decided.
Yeah.
I think many people tend to forget in Connecticut, we don't have county government.
No.
And usually when it comes to these zoning and planning issues, the counties, you go to New Jersey, you go to New York, a lot of the counties have a lot to say, and they work regionally among several towns and municipalities. Where in Connecticut, we're all very individualistic about this.
Yeah, and people, John, for good or better or bad or good or worse, whatever I should say, they enjoy, some of them, especially if it's going to affect their neighborhood, they don't want to go to Hartford, John. They want to, as you and I know, to go down to, you know, the local planning and zoning mission or the meeting or the zoning board of appeals once or twice a month. And if there's something, a development near their house, they want to get up and scream there. And a lot of these people apparently agree with that, that that's a key aspect of local city and town government, as contentious as it may be.
And not just for housing, Paul.
Yeah.
We want to get another area. Education.
Board of Ed. Board of Ed, yeah.
Yes. We kind of get out there when we want to or need to. And so that's been kind of the mantra for Connecticut. I mean, we love our land and city habits. We love our local control or home rule or Dillon's rule, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it's very difficult for the state to, you know, kind of at least enact or even offer a carrot, if you will, to localities as they were trying to. And listen, I got to tell you, and I think you know it, I've written a lot on and been supportive of transit-oriented development. You know, I've done my articles and research on this. But when you see how we do in Connecticut compared to other municipalities or other states, especially because they have strong county government like Maryland and New Jersey, they have a whole other plane, another way of going about it. And, you know, it's very difficult to plan out a lot of these initiatives when coming from the state.
And I think, John, a part of the reason that people push away from the county government thing, and we technically have counties, and I think a long time ago it mattered, but I think that that plays into the income disparity where you have some people in the city, in the suburb, saying, hey, I don't want this county government thing because I don't want to have to be responsible for X, Y, and Z. They've got their own problems. Wink, wink.
Well, and that's the resistance. Whether that's education, whether it's housing, include transportation, why don't you, at the same time, when it comes to like buses or rail. This is something, or even the highways, for God's sake. You know, go down the list of when you're talking about major infrastructure projects or education or housing. The resistance can be significant. It can be immense. And in some places, like, well, right there in Fairfield County, you know, it's amazing. You're going to find this, Paul, very fascinating. I cannot tell you how many people were like, well, it's always the Republicans or Republicans. I'm like, guys, pay attention to the Democrats. They're the ones who have been largely against in Fairfield County. I love how so much of the media out there and people who follow this is like, it's all the Republicans. Like, no. Slow your roll here. It's a lot of your limousine liberals who live in Fairfield and live in Westport. It's not who you think here. Slow it down.
Yeah.
You know, and yet it's very nuanced.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know whether you plugged in your crystal ball, John, knowing we were going to talk today. Does Ned Lamont run again? What do you think?
This has been the talk forever. And anytime I go to the Capitol, it's just, I can't get enough of this, you know? People just assume I'm hanging out with Ned Lamont in Greenwich.
Wait, you're not? Wait a minute. You're not at the polo club down there? Come on.
I missed that invite from him. I'm sorry. I just, you know, you know, I'm prepping enough to get in, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think?
From a lot of the indicators and from the gossip and the talk, I think he will run. I do. You know, the concern is that, and I'm sure you already know it, is that, you know, he really wants to challenge Trump in Washington, and that's been his mantra. And let's face it, something that many people tend to overlook is he's a pretty popular governor compared to most of the Democratic governors out there. He knows it. But I think that you're right. There's going to be, as you said before, you know, he went to break. There probably will be some internal, you know, schisms or challenges about this as to whether he should go for a third term because of many of your progressives who wanted to challenge him if he was, you know, if they didn't want to challenge him. But, you know, if he was not going to run, let's say he doesn't, then yes, it'd be a free-for-all of Democrats. That's going to be a given.
Oh, my God. And, John, finally, in about the minute we have left, you mentioned Mr. Trump there. We've all seen the big stories here. So not necessarily from the Trump angle, from the Democratic Party angle, weaving into what we saw with Mamdani. I mean, the Dems. I mean, John, I used an NFL allusion the other day. They're still in the concussion tent. I mean, from the election, like where's the who's the leader of the Democratic Party right now?
That's a big question, right? There's no real answer. And some people are even going back to Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
Well, yeah, they could. Either one would be a godsend right now, John.
Right, right. And, of course, we saw what happened with the Cuomo-Clinton business, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's going to be a while. Technically, I don't want to go into the weeds on this, but, you know, you can go through an understanding what party realignment theory is. Because when these party shifts and ebb and flow almost every generation, they're struggling constantly. It's going to a certain demographic or expanding the considerations to the party base or going after certain ideological stances. So these moments happen naturally almost every generation when you understand party alignment theory. So I hate saying it. It's natural progress of political parties. Mm-hmm. My biggest concern for the Democrats is what are they going to do to grow and consider the younger voter?
Yeah.
You don't see much of it out there, and I'm not surprised. Parties aren't good at that.
Yeah.
Both parties, really.
No, you're right. You're right. Dr. Jonathan Wharton, Southern Connecticut State University. John, thank you as always. Good to chat. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. Dr. Jonathan Wharton, he's a professor of political science and urban affairs at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. And every week at this time, quarter past break at 5 p.m. or so, every midweek Wednesday, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. And Dan, good afternoon. Have you yet got a copyright in yet on the Lamont Runometer or Runometer? What is that, Dan?
I call it a Runometer, but it can't get much higher right now because he already strongly hinted that he was running, and then he vetoed the big housing bill, which effectively you can debate, and we may do it in this very show, whether that veto signals him running, but it certainly helps his run.
Now
whether it signals him running is a different question.
You have the runometer at 83%. All right, now.
83.
Yeah, you mentioned that in a story where you mention, by the way, a frequent guest on this radio station and others around the state, a guy, as they say, is a rising star, Greenwich Republican State Senate member Ryan Fazio possibly running. What's up with that?
Ryan is stating publicly through my column today and for anyone else at this point, if you had him on, that he is strongly considering a run. And the pros of him running are that he's not, I wouldn't say unique, but there really aren't a lot of Republicans who can unite the party.
Yeah.
I don't think that the mayor of New Britain, Aaron Stewart, is succeeding in uniting people behind her conservative credentials, which some Republicans say are not strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan, on the other hand, is conservative enough for the Rob Sampson wing of the party, the true conservatives. And he's also able, due to his I guess you could say deliberative skills to maintain the more moderate Republicans in the vote without falling out of the vote. And so that makes him a potentially strong candidate.
Yeah. I wonder, Dan, though, and we've seen a couple of runs from Tom Foley from Fairfield County, and we saw a couple of runs from Linda McMahon or whatever. Are we past the point here where a lot of the state considers Fairfield County, that's not, not really Connecticut or those people down there. Do you think that would hamper Ryan Fazio or not?
No, because he's in office in Hartford. The Big Four, you can talk about the Big Four self-funding, super rich candidates, Leora Levy, Linda McMahon, Tom Foley, and Bob Stefanowski. Not one of them spent one day in Connecticut government. Oh, I'm sorry. Linda McMahon went to 11 meetings of the State Board of Education.
Okay.
And I checked. She never missed a single one. She went to all 11 meetings in her 11 months on the board. So, but all kidding aside, that's a big difference because Ryan Fazio has come to Hartford and has participated in the process. And not just participated, but he's gotten bills across. And so I don't mean to sound like his press agent, but that's a difference. He also is not Listen, having a fortune to spend of your own money, like those four I mentioned, is always nice to have. But that's what brings the baggage. It's not so much the location where you're in, as the fact that you're this, you know, this, that you're perceived as buying your way to the nomination.
Yeah, Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media, is the guest. Dan, are you in any way, shape, or form surprised? Now, you knew there was going to be blowback, but some of the stuff I've read as far as the, I don't know, arrogance or vitriol of the governor's veto of the housing bill and veto of the unemployment for striking workers bill, I was like, wow, reading some of this. That surprised you or not?
Well, there are two different vetoes going on. The housing bill did surprise me, and let's call that the wicked veto, and let's call the veto of the other one the good veto from the East. And that's not to say that I favor one policy over the other.
Yeah.
It's that the way he handled the veto in the case of the striking workers was correct.
Yeah.
He's the governor. It's his prerogative to oppose a policy. He never, ever said anything other than, I'm going to veto that bill, and feel free to give it to me. I'm going to veto it. And that's what he said, and that's what he meant, and that's what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good veto. That's a good veto. He can go up against people. That's not the problem. The problem with the housing bill is that he was at the table negotiating it and implicitly or explicitly signed off on it, only to turn around and veto it. That's the wicked veto of the West.
So when he comes out and says, Dan Harr, listen, I know I was in favor of this bill or the concept, but I heard from all these first selectmen and first select women and mayors and town and city council people, yeah, that's why I did it. Is that enough of a bandage on that, you think, or not?
It's only enough of a bandage because there's nobody on the left who's in position to challenge him because of the reasons we talked about a week or two ago, which is his vulnerability remains on the right, not the left.
Yeah.
His political vulnerability is on the right because that's where there could be a consolidated effort to face off against it. It is hard to imagine a consolidated effort on the left, because remember, as we discussed, there's the housing left, and there's the tax the rich left, then there's the environmental left, then there's the community building left, then there's the urban help us in the cities left. Those are different lefts. And they overlap, but let's take Senator Looney, for example.
Yeah.
He's as far left as they get, but he doesn't care much about the environmental issues.
Yeah.
Right? That's not his issue. So how do you get everybody behind one person, let's say Josh Elliott, right, who's been known to be deliberating over whether he's going to run?
Sure.
Right?
I think, Dan, the one final thing on housing here that's going to be interesting is when they get together in this special session, I would think ostensibly there's going to be nothing else going on. So the question remains, how open will this process be? Will there be regular public hearings? How bright will the spotlight be on this? And is that going to force both sides to be kind of more open about this, where we get, you know, some sort of micro analysis now on every aspect of this bill? I think that's going to be interesting.
It's not going to be open. There'll be analysis, but there won't be an open process. The governor and the majority leader, Jason Rojas, will spend the summer negotiating what they hope is an acceptable compromise. The 169 strong people are going to oppose anything at all. They're going to oppose anything that ends up with one single dwelling unit that they don't want in a place where they don't want it. So that's a given. And the governor already knew that going in. So it's not going to be an open process, but it's going to be a deliberative process. And then, as you know, in a special session, all that happens is a debate and a vote. There's no hearing.
You don't think there'll be any public hearings about this or open comment from people?
I mean, it's not out of the question legally, but I didn't envision that happening. I envisioned secretive negotiations with white smoke and a bill. and of course, this time around, we know that the governor has effectively created a line in the sand.
Yeah.
Right? And his effective line in the sand is no numbers. You can't put numbers on housing, because the numbers that are out there now are not onerous numbers.
Yeah.
Right? They're they're really not. And so we know that any number works. And by the way, I know this sounds like inside baseball, but you may have seen the governor called the numbers dumb. He
yes.
said it was a dumb idea.
Yes. Yes.
And then the response, and Jason Rojas, the majority leader who shepherded the bill through,
yeah.
specifically in his long comment that it was issued yesterday, said it is not dumb to find housing for people who need it.
All right.
And that was a direct shot at the governor.
All right.
A direct shot at the governor.
Yeah. Hey, it gets nasty, and I love it. Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, I will have to speak to Ryan Fazio about that story, and we'll see what happens. Thank you, sir.
Great to be here.
All right, thanks. Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media.